Have you been feeling stuck in your relationship, frustrated with your body, or totally disconnected from your pleasure and desire? Are you struggling to find new ways to approach old problems? Well, one-on-one coaching spots are now available in my private practice, and rates are going up January 1st, 2019. So now is the perfect time to book a free discovery call and learn more about how coaching might help you. You can check out the types of clients that I work with and my rates by clicking on the link in the show notes or at sexgetsreal.com/EP225. Let's tackle this together. You're listening to Sex Gets Real with Dawn Sarah. That's me. This is a place where we explore sex, bodies, and relationships from a place of curiosity and inclusion, tying the personal to the cultural, where you're just as likely to hear tender questions about shame and the complexities of love as you are to hear experts challenging the dominant stories around pleasure, body politics, and liberation. This is about the big and the small, about sex and everything surrounding it we don't usually name. The funny, the awkward, the imperfect happen here in service to joy, connection, healing, and creating healthier relationships with ourselves and each other. So welcome to Sex Gets Real. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Hey, you. Thanks for tuning in this week. The chat this week is with Stella Harris, who is a phenomenal sex educator, and she just published a new book called Tongue Tied, Untangling Communication in Sex, Kink, and Relationships. It comes out in a couple of weeks, if you're listening to this live, so in October 2018. And our entire chat is about how we can all level up around communication for kink and fantasies, relationships, our bodies. It's a really fun conversation. I also want to let you know that if you support the show at $3 and above on Patreon at patreon.com/sexgetsreal, Stella and I recorded a little bonus conversation all about threesomes. Stella is a threesomes expert, and so we talk about why dudes who try to convince their girlfriends to have threesomes are the worst. We also talk about how we can set ourselves up for success with threesomes if we're in a relationship, and how can we meet that elusive third to join in our fun. So if you want to hear that bonus chat, you can go to patreon.com/sexgetsreal and support the show at $3 and above. And if you support at $5 and above, I post listener questions about once a week, once every other week, and you are welcome to help answer them with me. So your advice and thoughts and feedback often make it on the show. So if you want to be an expert too, please hop over there for $5. So thank you so much to all of you who already support. And if you're curious about threesomes, now might be the time to do it too. I also wanted to mention that I have a new limited edition blog series happening over at dawnsarah.com called 40 Letters to My Younger Self. To help celebrate my 40th birthday, I will be writing 40 blog posts that are letters to my younger self about sex, love, my body, relationships, feelings, and so many of the other things that I've learned and unpacked along the way. So if you want to stay tuned and learn about those blog posts as they come out, head to dawnsarah.com and subscribe to the newsletter. So let me tell you a little bit about Stella, and then we will jump in. Stella Harris is changing the way people experience their sex lives. As a certified intimacy educator and sex coach, she gives her students the tools and confidence to explore their sexuality safely and free of shame. A national and international speaker, Stella teaches everything from pleasure anatomy to communication skills to kink and BDSM. Stella writes a weekly advice column for the Portland's Willamette Week newspaper, and her erotic fiction has appeared in more than a dozen anthologies. So here is my chat with Stella Harris, and then don't forget to pop over to Patreon to hear our threesomes bonus. Welcome to Sex Gets Real, Stella. We are going to talk all about talking and communication and sex today. So welcome.
Thank you. My favorite.
Yes, exactly. So you just wrote a book called Tongue Tied that is all about sexual communication and talking about sex and talking about fantasies. And I would love to just start with, as someone who's been in sex education for a long time and worked with couples, why was it important to you to write this book?
Well, what was coming up as a theme for me, both in group classes and with my private client work with individuals and couples, was that no matter what people wanted to learn, that the piece that I was repeating over and over was the how to talk about it piece. In fact, that even how this book was born, Cleus initially approached me about a bondage book. And when I was on the phone with them about that, I geeked out so much about the communication and negotiation that was required to do bondage well. Then they said, actually, just do that. And that just really mirrored my experience with all of these classes. You know, when I'm teaching about anything from kink to threesomes to opening a relationship to, you know, vanilla monogamous sex, people weren't doing the talking pieces. People were coming to me. People would come to my office, tell me, like, here's the kind of sex I would like to be having with my partner. And I would say, great, have you told them that? They would say, no. I'm like, all right, well, there's a place to start. And unpacking why it was easier to come and tell a complete stranger from the internet mm-hmm. about their desires than it was to tell their partner. So that's sort of where it started.
Yes. Listeners of the show will know that no matter what the questions are about that come in, it's 95% of the time boils down to exactly what you just said, which is, I have a thing that I want to try or a thing I need to say, and how do I try the thing or say the thing without having to talk?
Yeah.
You know, or without having to be uncomfortable. How can I do it just so that no matter what, it's going to be a yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So that discomfort around needing to be vulnerable and take a risk, I think, is such a big part of so much of the work that we do as sex educators, is like kind of helping people realize like that's just part of doing this stuff.
Yeah, vulnerability training really would be more apt than sex education in a lot of scenarios. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You had this great part right at the beginning of the book that was like, interested in bondage? You've got to talk about it. Want to open your relationship? So much talking. Eager to try new kinds of sex? You guessed it. That requires a conversation. And I think that just captures this so perfectly. You know, that people do have these wonderful wants and fantasies and curiosities, and it's the talking about it where we tend to get really hung up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did you come up with when you kind of grappled with the question, why would someone tell a complete stranger that they want to, you know, be fisted in the ass while being set on fire versus being able to talk to the person they love the most or even someone that they're just in a relationship with?
I think it's a lot lower stakes. Mm-hmm. If I reject them, if I, you know, tell them they're a weirdo for what they're interested in, which I have yet to ever say to anybody, but for someone coming in, if that's the fear, like, oh, she might have a bad reaction to this. But if that happens with me, a complete stranger, they never have to come back to my office again. If they tell their partner and the partner has a bad reaction, that can have ramifications in the whole relationship. They might fear it's a relationship ender or that things will now be awkward forever. They can't just walk away from it the way they could walk away from me if it went poorly. Mm-hmm. So I think it is a lot lower stakes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have found that often, you know, especially when we start getting anxious or scared about something, then we start kind of moving into that catastrophic mindset. And often I find so many people get to a place where like this one conversation is going to make or break all the things.
Yeah.
And there's so much pressure that gets put on this singular conversation as if we just talk about this one thing once, it's all done and we never have to talk about it again. And I think what's so beautiful about what is clear through your book and all of the advice that you share is like, this is just a part of being a grown up and being in a sexual relationship or a relationship of any kind, is like conversations have to happen. And sometimes it's going to take multiple conversations to negotiate something or figure something out.
Right. And I think people also, when they work up to sharing a fantasy with a partner, they also have it in mind that there's only one satisfactory outcome. Mm-hmm. So they have conceived of a fantasy in a particular way, and they're wanting their partner to engage with it in that exact way. So they also haven't thought through the other ways they can incorporate that thing into their life. Maybe the partner doesn't want to or can't physically do the thing, but they could dirty talk about it or watch porn about it or read erotica about it. But I think people are looking for only one particular answer, which also raises the stakes of that conversation. And if it is the, you know, set me on fire example, you know, there's a lot of logistical stuff going on there. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reasons a partner maybe would be anything from unwilling or just not know how to engage in that with you. So those are sort of other pieces that need to be in place when you're having that conversation, is having a variety of outcomes that could be satisfactory. And even just sharing the fantasy and being accepted, that alone builds intimacy, even if you never do the things. But I don't think that is an outcome that people are looking for when they go into those conversations.
I love that so much, that sometimes, and you're right, you know, like, even if you're just like annoyed that someone didn't do the dishes, to sit in that annoyance is a very different experience than to just be able to say, like, I'm kind of feeling really annoyed right now, and I just want to like share it. You don't need to do something different. And then like all of a sudden it's like, oh, whoa, I feel so much better, and I'm not annoyed and resentful anymore. And, mm-hmm. you know, being able to say like, I've got this fantasy, and I'm not sure if it's something we want to do. I'm not sure if it's something I want to do, but I'd love to just be able to share this inner experience with you and have it held. That's such a beautiful, beautiful, rich thing that a lot of us don't, I mean, nobody really tells us that that's an acceptable version of like a sexual exchange.
Well, it's the same thing with any sort of conversation. You know, when we're helping people communicate, I think one of the first things a lot of us teach is having somebody make clear if they're looking for solutions and actions, or if they just want to be heard. Mm-hmm. And like so many things, I think that translates to the realm of sex as well, and vice versa. I think so many of these skills, you know, they translate from daily life to friendships, to sexual relationships, to business. I mean, all of this, you know, explaining what you're looking for out of a conversation can make a huge difference. Mm.
So I know it's something that you've heard a lot, and it's something I have certainly heard a lot in, you know, in classes that I've taught too, is this fear around ruining the mood. Mm-hmm. So can we just unpack that a little bit? Because, you know, that is something that gets reinforced by the glossy magazines and, you know, the pop culture is you say the thing and then everything's ruined and nothing happens. And what do you say to that question of, but won't talking about this ruin the mood?
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple answers for that. Sometimes when I get it in a class, you know, depending on the tone of the class, my snarky answer for that generally is that lousy sex has already ruined the mood. So talking about it really is the least of your problems at that point. But more realistically, I think what happens is that because people aren't talking in general, what they're imagining is that it comes out of the blue completely. They're imagining they have gone on a date and kissed goodnight and pulled someone into their house and they've made out on the couch and they've gone upstairs and they've taken their clothes off. And then, you know, in the middle of some kind of genital touch, they are going to pull out charts and say, you know, a little to the left and a little harder and use this toy. And sure, that might be a little bit odd. So that's part of why I'm encouraging people to do things that sometimes I get told are silly. You know, at the end of a date, asking if you can stand a little closer to someone, asking if you can put your arm around them, asking before a kiss. When you have established that kind of open communication, then it's not weird when you are also talking about what kind of sex you like, how you like to be touched. You've already set the tone for that, and it's not out of the blue. And you're more likely to have a relaxed partner if they know things aren't going to happen suddenly and before they're ready, because you've already been talking about it.
Yeah, that fear of the no, I think often creates that silence of like, well, if I ask if I can hold your hand and you say no, then I can't tolerate that. That feels hard. So I'm just going to grab your hand.
Right.
And, you know, I'll admit, even me, the first time someone, you know, I had learned, oh, you should ask before you hug people. And the first time I asked somebody like, hey, do you want a hug? I'd like to hug you goodbye. And they were like, no, I really don't want a hug right now. I was kind of like, what? Because nobody had ever said that to me before. And it was this weird moment of like, now what do I do? But, you know, the next time it happened, it was so much easier. It was like, oh, okay, cool. You know, like, do you want to shake hands? Or we just like kind of high fiving? And they were like, yeah, let's high five and high five. And, you know, so I think it's also kind of that we make the fear so much worse than it is. And if we just do it a couple of times, then it doesn't feel awkward anymore because we've done it.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a story on a podcast a while ago about somebody who tried to battle their fear of rejection by getting rejected 10 times a day. Do you remember this? He would like go to the grocery store and ask somebody else to pay for his groceries, ask strangers for a ride, you know, all of this stuff, which of course there was this piece of, you know, of course it was a white man, so he was safe out in the world asking ridiculous things of people.
Right.
And he ran up against the problem of people were too nice and he was actually getting yeses instead of nos. Mm-hmm. But it's true. Many of us haven't had to deal with a lot of no's, and that's kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
And I think there's some unpacking to do there about how you're asking the question. If it's, and I run into this in some even supposedly sex positive communities, you know, I'll be at a party and someone will say something like, can I hug you? But they're doing it when they're already opening their arms, reaching for me. And it's clearly they've been told they're supposed to ask, but they're not actually gauging my interest or waiting for an answer. And so I think that's another piece of it is, are you asking because you were told to ask, or are you actually trying to start a conversation about what, if any, kind of interaction the other person would like? And I think the hugging example is great for that. And this is definitely where I make myself a little bit of a weirdo, but I have had, you know, circumstances where I'm saying goodbye to someone and this got maybe too clinical, but I actually said to somebody once, would you like some kind of goodbye touching? And we ended up like rubbing our butts on each other, you know, cause I'm like, oh, we can make up anything we want. And I was actually recently at a conference and this happened at a table I was sitting at. Some new people joined our table. The person sitting next to me offered a handshake and the person who sat down said, like, is a particular, like, handshake in particular very important to you? And the person sitting next to me said no. And the other person said, well, it's not really my favorite greeting. How about we fist bump? And then they did that. And then, you know, it went into this whole conversation of different styles of a fist bump that I'm certainly too old for. but that was sort of a great example of it wasn't that the person didn't want to engage. They just wanted to engage differently. And so it can open a conversation of, well, what can you do?
That is the thing that's so exciting to me. That right there is the thing that, like, that I wish more people, like, got down in their bones, and hopefully future generations will have more opportunities to feel their way into, of when we actually stop and ask, like, what kind of exchange would be really fun for us in this moment? Or what kind of, you know, goodbye touch would feel good to you? We've now completely eliminated the script, or that there's the potential for eliminating the script, and you might end up rubbing butts or fist bumping or doing all kinds of other things that feel so much more personal and collaborative and yummy, rather than just going through the motions of kind of what you always do or what you assume somebody wants. And like the creativity and the imagination that's possible when we just kind of shift the tiniest bit becomes so exciting to me because the options are limitless.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So much of your book is around really being able to find language and to examine, you know, your motivations and looking for different ways to approach conversations and even different ways to collaborate on solutions. And for you, like, what makes for good communication in a relationship?
So many things. The self-awareness piece is definitely huge. I don't think you can communicate effectively if you don't actually know where you're coming from and what you need. I think knowing sort of what is necessary for you and what is negotiable. Certainly there are some things for people that are absolute deal breakers, and that's fine. But like you were saying with the dish example, I think people tend to grow up with or messages from the culture are that everything needs to be one particular way. So knowing when there are areas in which you are in fact flexible. So if your partner's always leaving the dishes dirty, what do you actually need about that? Like, so first you've got the self-awareness to say, okay, I'm feeling annoyed, and even identifying that feeling. Maybe it starts with something physically manifesting in your body. Maybe it starts with realizing you are interacting with your partner differently. Maybe you're irritated when they touch you, and you have to sort of pick apart what's happening here. What am I feeling? Why am I feeling it? And all of that can be already a lot of sort of tricky steps for folks. And then if you identify like, oh, it's the dish of, you know, the sink of dirty dishes, that's really aggravating for me. Then what do you want? Was it like your example? You just want them to hear that that's an issue for you? Are you looking for them to actually do something differently? In which case, effective communication would be, you know, stating a feeling and making a request. Because even just saying, I'm really irritated when there's a sink full of dishes, there's not a request in there. And people often think right. that stating a feeling is making a request. And so someone can say, oh, right. it, you know, drives me nuts when you leave, you know, your underwear on the floor, or dirty dishes in the sink. But that's not actually you saying, please wash the dishes. And I think that's one of those things where we sort of fall apart. People think that they have been clear. But if the other person isn't getting the message, then you weren't clear. So that can be a huge part of it as well. Just making sure you are actually communicating what you're trying to communicate and being really explicit if there's a request in there. Because I often overhear conversations, you know, when I'm having people talk to each other in my office, where no requests are actually being made. Because again, that's the scary part, right? Even if it's not, you know, a long-held sexual fantasy, even if it is, I really wish my partner would wash the dishes. That can still be scary, because what if they say no? You know, that's still a no. And then you have to decide how you're going to manage that conflict and manage those feelings. So we don't make requests even in more mundane areas of our life.
Yeah. And I think too, around that, something that I've encountered is both personally and professionally is sometimes what we really want and need is a few layers down, and we have to kind of do a little bit of unpacking and digging and trying, and then realizing that, oh, that actually wasn't it. Like an example, that I encountered in some work I was doing was this person was like, it was around, you know, housework and like laundry. And it was this like, oh, you never pick up after yourself. You always leave your clothes everywhere. And the response from the partner was like, well, if you ask, I'll do it. And you never ask, you just like complain about it. And the person was like, well, I shouldn't have to ask.
Yeah.
And then underneath that was the real need, which was, I feel like I'm having to ask you to do things that I don't have to be asked to do. So now let's talk about that. Let's talk about the emotional labor. It's not really about the clothes. It's about the fact that there's this sense of like babysitting and caretaking happening. And so, you know, like I think sometimes we have to kind of have the conversation and then realize like, oh, actually there's more. There's something underneath that. That's not really it. And to leave space for that is important.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a really great article about that a while ago, about sort of the emotional labor of managing what needs to happen. Even if you're not doing the work, even if you're telling someone else, you know, and you need to pack this lunch and you need to do these dishes and you need to shop for dinner, that is a job. The asking is a job.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And something else that I thought was really, really incredible about about Tongue Tied was you continually asked people to examine their assumptions. And that is such a tricky thing because we often think something is so glaringly obvious that we don't even know it's a thing that we need to verbalize. And that invitation, you know, I think going back to like good communication is kind of being clear of what's not getting spoken and then holding generosity, knowing we're not going to be perfect around this. And I think like when we lose generosity with our partners is where we really are like, okay, we've got some stuff that we need to unpack and talk about, maybe work with a professional around, because I think that the assumptions get us into a lot of trouble, but sometimes we don't even know where to start. Like, where do we start? In kind of like looking at where am I holding some assumptions of something that's just so obvious that it wouldn't even occur to me I have to say it. How can I start finding those things inside myself?
Well, I think there's a few ways. Sort of the after the fact way is what we've talked about a little bit with, you know, checking with our feelings. Like our annoyances can uncover an assumption. If I'm annoyed if there's dirty dishes in the sink, that means I have an assumption that somebody should wash their dishes immediately after use. So you can sort of find the things that are bothering you and then backtrack from that feeling. And there's also, I'll have people sit down and do exercises where I ask them to start unpacking and just sort of make lists of what is everything you're expecting from this relationship or from this partnership. And we'll usually start with parameters, you know, because that could be miles long list there of everything you want from a relationship. But when we're talking about it in terms of, you know, certain like the companionship area also often comes up. So, you know, if you're dating somebody, does that mean you're assuming that you always see each other on Friday, Saturday nights? Does it mean you're assuming you go to any kind of special event, you know, work events, weddings, you know, things like that, a lot of stuff that, again, mainstream culture tells you this is what a partner does, but our obvious is not somebody else's obvious. So just sort of both ways, starting up front by sort of trying to do some of the unpacking and making lists, and then catching yourself whenever you're having the feelings around either an annoyance after the fact, or if you catch yourself having an expectation, if you catch yourself, you know, wondering what your sweetie is going to get you for your birthday, maybe take a moment and say, did you ever tell them it was important that they get you something for your birthday? Because gift giving is not everybody's jam. And I think, you know, people again will say talking to ruins the mood, it ruins the surprise. But what's going to be worse, saying like, hey, by the way, a birthday present is important to me, and making, you know, that 5% less of a surprise, or having your birthday come and go without them acknowledging it in the way that's meaningful to you?
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. I feel like you're describing my childhood. That was definitely the dynamic in my household that I watched unfold at every birthday and every Christmas was, I can't believe you didn't get me something again. And then the fights that ensued from that. And it becomes really toxic really quickly when that's an ongoing dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. For people who, you know, starting a new relationship with someone and being able to practice these types of skills and to practice being really open about sex and expressing yourself is scary and also awesome, because you can kind of like lay the foundation for a way of doing relationship that feels good for you. But what about people who have been in relationship for 10, 15, 20 years, and they've been tolerating a lot of things for a very long time, and then they read your book or they take a workshop and they realize, holy shit, I don't want to do these things that I've been doing for the past 10 or 15 years anymore. They feel terrible. What do you recommend for people who kind of need to navigate that landscape?
Yeah, well, definitely starting small. You know, you can't remake your entire life and way of relating having read one book, no matter how good the book is. often that is a time for professional help, whether it's a coach or a therapist or some other sort of support that can be really helpful. And as you said, it's easier to start new patterns with a new relationship when you're in a long-term existing relationship and you have a lot of patterns. Sometimes you can derail some of that by trying a new thing together, something that you both have permission to not know how to do. This is something that I actually really enjoy using bondage for, even with folks who aren't kinky. But rope bondage is one of those things that most of us are not beating ourselves up for not knowing how to do already. You know, that's not something we were supposed to learn in school. And it is something that requires so much communication that as you're learning to do that, you'll learn skills that you can then translate into other parts of your connection or other parts of your sex life. And for folks who aren't ready to be doing something that is risky or intimate, just about any task that requires physicality can work for this. So, I mean, learning to go rock climbing or sailing or anything like that where you have to do physical things together, you have to talk about it. You have to coordinate. I mean, maybe not playing golf or something that you can do entirely by yourself, but something where you're relying on another person to do their piece of it to keep you safe. You start learning some of that give and take and some of those ways to talk that you will then find might start translating into other areas of your life. Because it often takes a complete derailing of those patterns. If you just try to add more talking to, you know, the exact sex routine that you've been doing for 20 years, I certainly applaud that. But yes, sometimes you need a few more tools before that's going to flow.
Yeah. I love the invitation of trying something new or kind of approaching it from a new angle. There's this sense of we're in it together that I think comes with that. If we get to create new memories and go new places and feel awkward or unsure together, instead of sometimes I think when we approach these conversations of like, I want to change all the things, it can feel very much like an attack to the person that is kind of just like, where did this come from? You know, I thought things were fine. I thought things were happy. So you're right, like being able to reset the dynamic and kind of like, let's try this new thing and see how that goes. And then start gathering these new memories and these new skills and maybe asking new questions. And that's a really like generous way to kind of approach these shifts. And I think then the question is that time and energy we want to put in? You know, and sometimes the answer is going to be yes, and it's going to be uncomfortable for a while. And sometimes the answer is no, I'm really, really done. And that's okay too.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the things actually way back in my coach training, a really powerful thing that my instructor said is that people will come to you asking you to save their relationship. And sometimes the answer is no. You know, you have to tell people maybe you each need to do your own separate work for a while and then come back and see if doing this together is right for you or not. But sometimes people are in situations that aren't ideal for them, or they've developed habits that are toxic to them. And sometimes doing separate personal growth is the way to go. I think this is from More Than Two, the idea that the individuals in a relationship are always more important than the relationship. And I think that is an idea that we lose. And I remember experiencing that, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, I got divorced. And I remember having had the mindset of like, oh, well, I signed up for this. And so now I just need to be in it forever, no matter what, because that's what you do. And I do think that our culture sort of punishes that idea of quitting anything or losing at anything, you know, as if a relationship is sort of a sport that you have to win, you know, yes, by staying furiously miserable, but together forever.
Right.
And yeah, I don't think that mindset's doing anybody any favors.
Yeah. Agreed. One of the other parts of the book that I really appreciated is, you know, you are challenging people to really think about what are all of the things that are going unspoken. And where are the places where we need to ask questions around, like, what makes you feel heard? And what does monogamy mean to you? And what does flirting mean to you? And what is it like when I talk to someone of this gender? And what is it like when I touch someone of this gender? And really, where are we probably holding individual stories that probably need to be discussed and bridged? And something that I really loved from the book, if you don't mind, I'd love to read a paragraph.
Sure.
Okay, it says, before talking to a friend, think about what you need to share to get help and what should stay private. For these decisions, it can be best to have explicit conversations with your partner about what can be shared and what stays between the two of you. For example, sometimes details of sex acts or fantasies might be too intimate to share. But keep in mind that you can always talk about your own experience, and if someone is trying to keep you quiet or keep you from talking to your friends, that can be a big red flag. I appreciate the fact that often we don't ask our partners how they feel when we talk to other people about the sex we have or what our relationship looks like. And I think that's such an important thing, like a place where we could easily betray or violate someone's trust without ever thinking that we are.
Mm-hmm.
Because that just doesn't get talked about.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's tricky on a few fronts. I actually had a date with a newer person a few weeks ago, and by text afterward, they actually asked me, like, hey, do you mind if I tell my other partner the stuff that we did? And I was sort of blown away that this person from the, you know, quote unquote default world, who's not in any of these communities, thought to ask me that. I was just like so thrilled. I'm like, yes, absolutely. Tell them, you know, whatever you would like. But being asked felt really amazing. And that so rarely happens. And the other thing around that is I don't think we sort of realize how we can accidentally poison our friends against our partners. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had situations where a friend spends so much time complaining to me about someone, and then we'll all be at a group function together. And it's like, ooh, I don't know how to interact, how to feel about this, you know, and then the next day they're like, oh, everything is, it's fine now. Don't worry about it. Because I do think complaining becomes almost a sport, and we're so much more likely to complain than to talk about the good things. And then that can also create this huge imbalance where everyone thinks, you know, all of their friends are miserable in their relationships, but really you were just hearing about it when they were having a moment of frustration. But yeah, also trying to decide what is that bubble of intimacy? What is private, especially for folks who might have multiple relationships where they're sharing information around safety, you know, some amount of sharing has to happen there. But what do you want to sort of hold private or sacred for each connection?
Something just occurred to me as you were talking, which was, I know in my 20s, especially, that a lot of the times when I was talking to a friend about a relationship or a sexual experience that I was having, it was more about creating intimacy with that friend.
Yeah.
Than like actually caring about the thing that I was complaining about or talking about. And I think that is a really interesting place to interrogate. Like, am I wanting to divulge all of these details because that feels like a way to maintain this friendship, or because I genuinely like want to be seen and heard, or I need help unpacking something about this other relationship where the sex is happening? And like that just, I was like, wow, yeah, I performed a lot of that for my friends, and it wasn't even about, you know, the person that I was talking about. So that's, yeah, that's, wow, Dawn. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, and I think that's, you know, we do perform for our friends. And I think sort of one of those basic filters that a lot of people suggest, you know, before anything comes out of your mouth, think about, is it kind?
Yeah.
Like, yes, absolutely. Reach out to your friends if there's something that you need support around, if you're unsure about. But how would you feel if the person that you were talking about heard you saying it? Mm-hmm. You know, are you doing it in a way that makes for a funny story, that is performative, that's maybe making fun of them, that's unkind? Or are you saying, hey, this thing happened and I'm not sure how to feel about it and I could use some support? Mm-hmm. And yeah, looking looking at what kind of reaction you're hoping to get. You know, if you're hoping that the other person will laugh or be shocked, then maybe that's a kind of communication that isn't coming from a place of kindness necessarily.
And I think it also really helps to go back to what you were mentioning around, you know, like, am I looking for advice or am I looking for empathy? Do I just need to be heard or do I actually want to try and do some problem solving with this person? Because if I know that going into an interaction, like, look, I am feeling really frustrated and I just kind of need to be able to say these things. Can you hold this with me? And then afterwards, we'll just move on. Like, I don't need advice. I think that also helps to give us a little bit of clarity around our motivations when we know what we're asking of the person that we're talking to. And then, of course, allowing them to consent to that. But, you know, there's a distinct difference between, hey, I'm really confused and I'd love to, like, get your thoughts versus I'm just really pissed off. My partner did this thing and I kind of just need to be like, argh, and then let's move on instead of it turning into like a great big bash session with both of you, you know, going back and forth about what an asshole, because I've certainly done that in the past too. Just the consent piece on all fronts.
Yeah.
Can our friends show up for us in this way? And do our partners feel okay with us, you know, talking about these things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, it can get ridiculous. I had I was geeking out with another sex educator who I hadn't seen for a long time and was sort of filling her in on a rough breakup that I'd had. And I remember I was telling her something about how the breakup conversation went. And when I was telling her, I remember saying, well, this isn't what he said, but here's what I heard. And she sort of like had to stop me to laugh at me that like, that was my version of like sharing breakup heartbreak was still like acknowledging that it was like my reality of what had happened. And I mean, I do think these things eventually get really ingrained in a way that can be helpful and can help you separate some of that hurt from, you know, what you're experiencing to what happened and what was the intention there versus what was the outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll never forget. I officiated a wedding about 10 years ago for some friends of mine. And part of their wedding ceremony was that they had everyone attending the wedding stand and take vows of support. And essentially it was, you know, do you vow to support us? And when one of us comes to you feeling really angry or we're venting, can you help to remind us why this relationship is important? And can you help to be there as part of a community so that the burden isn't only on us to try and make this relationship a healthy one? And it was the first time I'd ever heard anyone like acknowledge the importance of the people around you and the ways that they contribute and support to the relationships that we're
Absolutely.
In or don't, mm-hmm. you know, and how isolating that can feel. And that's such a different exchange than the ones that we kind of like default to.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Was that a Jewish wedding by any chance?
It was not. It was a lesbian wedding, but not a Jewish one.
That is actually a tradition in more like more traditional Jewish weddings.
Oh.
Conservative or Orthodox weddings acknowledge that the whole community has a hand in helping hold the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Breakups are something else that I know we all have a lot of feelings around. And I would love it if we could just take a couple of minutes to talk about, you know, in your experiences, both personally and professionally, and the work that you do, what are the ways that we can improve kind of culturally and personally when it comes to breakups? Like, how can we break up with someone in a way that's not just ghosting? Or a friend of mine had his partner of 7 years leave a post-it note on the fridge and then never saw him again. You know, like, how can we avoid kind of the horror stories of the breakups and actually do breakups kind of from a place of like mutuality?
Yeah. I mean, that is so rough. We've all had the heartbreak at some point. And I think that sort of is the culmination of everything we've talked about, where a conversation can be scary because you're being vulnerable and you're not sure about what the outcome is. And also breakups often come when people have hit such a a peak of frustration that they're not coming from a place of kindness anymore. So I think there's so many things there. I think one is the self-awareness to know when something stops being healthy for you before you've reached that peak of, I'm going to break everything in the house and walk out and never talk to them again. Because before that happened, and you know, in that example, it's probably been a year or more of that relationship not being good for you. So I think like with anything in a relationship, it's having regular enough check-ins that you know when something is bothering you enough to be mentioned, or when you know when maybe not being there at all is best for you. And there's also, I think, some things about our mindset towards relationships. You know, so much of our culture talks about, you know, the one and things like that. And so if people have a nasty breakup, I heard this somewhere recently, I don't know where, but someone was saying that like, oh, they had this nasty breakup, and so must not have actually been in love with that person. Because you can only have, you know, the one true love. So if something ends, that wasn't it. And invalidating everything you did have together. So I think some of it is unpacking that idea of there's only one love, there's only one person for you out there. But that sort of outlook, if we're looking for the one forever, and then any relationship that ends is a failure.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I have this even with friends who never want to see their exes again because they are looking at it as a failure. Meanwhile, in my life, I am friends with all but one of my exes. And, you know, even if something doesn't work romantically, you know, if somebody was already a huge part of my life and we had a lot in common, you know, chances are I still want them in my life. We have to figure out what ways are going to be healthy and productive for us. But that's one of the things that I like about, you know, unpacking some things about monogamy culture as well. Even if you're monogamous, that idea that, you know, ever interacting with or talking to a friend, an ex as a friend is some sort of like cheating or that's dangerous. I mean, that's one of the things that I like about, you know, the way some people do polyamory and the way I think people in all relationship styles could sort of model that. Having multiple intimate connections, not necessarily sexual, but just intimate connections, is so vital. Having multiple close friends. And I think when that's sort of your mindset, it makes it easier to stay friends with an ex, find out what works for you. And to be able to, you know, certainly go away and lick your wounds for as long as you need, a couple of weeks, a couple of months, but then come back together and decide, What can friendship look like for us? Mm-hmm. You know, what does feel good for us to still have the parts that were good about our connection and to let go of the parts that weren't working?
Yeah. And just the feeling when you think about that, you know, I mean, of getting to a point where you just utterly cannot stand that person and all of the energy and the exhaustion and the grief and the resentment that comes with that. And just kind of the explosiveness of needing to like eject that person and everything they stand for from your life. That feels very different than this is just starting to feel like maybe our relationship needs to look a different way. And how can we create something wonderful from there? And like, yes, let's grieve and let's be confused and sad and maybe take some time. But you're right. You know, I mean, unless it's an abusive or just a really shitty kind of manipulative situation. Sure. These people are in our lives for a reason. And we have so many memories and stories and rituals that we don't have to give up just because we, you know, transition to a different way of being together. And that to me feels so much more luscious because then we can have all these different kinds of like nuanced relationships with all of these multitude of meanings. And that gives us a chance to be seen in all of our complexity and nuance too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you spent all that time building the, you know, the safety and the vulnerability, that feels like a lot to throw away and walk away from if some pieces of that are still working well.
Yeah. So the last question I have for you before we wrap up, and Patreon supporters, Stella and I are going to go record a little Patreon bonus after our chat, and it's going to be about threesomes, because I always get questions from you about threesomes, so Stella and I are going to go there. But the last question I have for you is one that I've been grappling with a lot lately and have talked about on the show, and I've been inviting people to sit in, and that is trying to find a way to grapple with the personal responsibility that we have of, you know, understanding our needs and our edges, our boundaries and our desires, and communicating those with another human being, and kind of the personal aspect of that. And how can we also start confronting some of the unspoken power that exists in our relationships? Like, of the relationships that I'm in, who is making more money? Who tends to have more cultural power? Who's experiencing discrimination on a daily basis? And who has trauma? Or who does the majority of the emotional labor? What are some ways you think people can start a kind of grappling a little bit with, like, power and privilege when it comes to also looking at new ways to communicate, so that it doesn't become about power over or manipulating someone using your skills around communication, but instead, like, really genuinely grappling with, is this person agreeing with me because I have more privilege and power than they do? Like, how can we start doing that?
I mean, I think that's huge, of course. It's one of the ways that I actually like to bring some lessons from kink into other sorts of relationships. You know, when people are negotiating some kind of a power exchange in kink, that is one of the conversations that's had, you know, this notion that it is a power exchange. It's not just somebody having power over the other person, because we have plenty of that in our real lives. But instead, this notion that everyone involved has power, and here's how we're choosing intentionally and consensually and choosing to exchange power for certain outcomes. So taking that sort of framework and having those conversations, like you said, sitting down with a partner, even if you're not planning on doing anything that looks like kink, but sitting down and saying, you know, what does it mean if somebody is making more money? What does it mean if somebody is of a more privileged race? Like, how are those things impacting your connection? And talking about ways that you might want to mitigate that, and what does that look like? I often suggest that people do regular relationship check-ins in some sort of a space that genuinely feels like a neutral environment. You know, so if one partner has all the money and bought all the stuff and paid for the house, maybe having a conversation in that house, you know, even that can be a little bit charged. So going out to a coffee shop or a park, or just finding a place that feels more neutral to start picking some of that stuff apart. And again, negotiating for everything and coming with a framework of what is bringing value to the relationship. You know, like some of the things that you suggested, like who's doing physical labor around the house, who's doing emotional labor, trying to acknowledge all of the pieces that make a relationship work as work. You know, who is remembering everybody's birthdays and who's making the social calendar and all of that, and making sure that those things that are getting done get acknowledged. And sometimes that can be a matter of keeping track for a while, you know, keeping some sort of journal either separately or for the relationship to just make sure you can acknowledge those things. You know, how often are you reminding your partner, you know, they have a meeting and need to wear something nice that day, or anything like that, like all the little things that we do for people that we live with or care about, and making sure that those things are acknowledged and celebrated and thanked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if there is something really blatant like money, having it be an explicit conversation about what that's going to mean. And ideally having that before you are deeply entrenched in that relationship. So if you're getting into a relationship with somebody who makes a lot more money than you, does that mean that they're going to be paying for more than half of the stuff? And if so, what does that mean? making sure that you don't get into a position where you feel like you don't get to say no anymore, or you owe certain things. Or are you keeping finances separate? So when you go out to dinner, you know, you're not going to fancy restaurants you can't afford. You're going to things that you can both split and share, and just sort of, you know, going back to unpacking the assumptions, but unpacking every little thing, seeing what that's going to look like and what that means. And also, are there places where you need to mitigate some of that? Are there ways that you need to give your partner additional resources or raise their voice in certain ways so they can feel heard and safe?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not stuff that we see modeled really very many places, if any. You know, we don't see these kinds of conversations happening on television shows or movies or in the fiction books that we read often. And so, you know, it can feel really scary the first times that we have these kinds of conversations. But also, what a tremendous, an incredible intimate experience to be able to say, you know, what are the ways that I'm showing up and what are the ways you're showing up, and how can we do this from a place that feels really co-creative and nurturing and naming the things that often don't go named. You know, I mean, Alex and I have talked about like the white lady privilege that I have, mm-hmm. and the ways that I get to move through the world as a white person that's different from him. And, you know, we've also spent a lot of time unpacking the ways that I move through the world in a fat body, whereas he's in a very, very fit, you know, kind of like traditionally attractive body, and the microaggressions that I experience, and like being able to really name and grapple those things and the different ways that that then impacts the places where we may silence ourselves or where we may take up more space than the other one has led to some of the richest, juiciest conversations. And I've never been in a relationship where that happens before, but I think it's created a lot more trust and a lot more depth. And so I love this invitation you're offering of like, let's talk about money and what it means to you and what it means to me. And let's talk about, you know, who's doing this type of labor and how can we allow those things to be true and both feel really seen and supported and excited about what we're doing together. Like, that to me is where really awesome stuff starts happening.
And some of it can be, you know, verbally acknowledging that, you know, just making sure you derail comments that are made by mm-hmm. friends or coworkers or strangers, just like not letting, like you were saying, some of the microaggressions pass. You know, if somebody has more privilege in one area of their life than their partner does, calling those things out when they happen, it, you know, if it's at a place and time that it's safe to do so, you know, using that, the areas where you have privilege to help your partner in areas where they have less. And like you said, there could be, I mean, there can be give and take on that as well. Like, some people have more in some areas, some people have more in others, but using that for good, hopefully not just for our romantic partners, but
yeah,
you know, for friends. Everybody that we're sharing Family. This planet with,
yes.
that would be ideal.
Oh my God. Well, I hope everyone checks out Tongue Tied, especially if you're someone who has written into the show in the past and just been really struggling with how to ask about a thing or talk about a thing. This book offers so many questions and checklists and frameworks and examples to think through. So Stella, how can people stay in touch with you, find you online, get the book?
You can find my website at stellaharris.net. The book is currently available from all the places for pre-order, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, directly from Kleis. You can also ask your local bookstore or sex shop to please carry it. That would be lovely. You can find me on Instagram, Stella Harris Erotica, Twitter, Stella Erotica. From back in my fiction writing days. I'm all over the internet. I'm pretty easy to find, and I would love to hear from you all.
Awesome. I will have all of those links, of course, in the show notes and at sexgetsreal.com for this episode. Stella, thank you so much for being here with us and sharing all of your wisdom and stories. This has been wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you're so welcome. To everybody who tuned in, please go to sexgetsreal.com to not only check out Stella's links and to pre-order the book, but also to send me any questions, comments, and stories that you want to share and potentially have featured on the show. You can do so anonymously. And Patreon supporters, head over to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to hear Stella and I talking all about threesomes. So we will talk to you there. Bye.
You used to light up like a spark. Now you're blue, treading water in the dark.
A huge thanks to the vocal few, the married duo behind the music featured in this week's intro and outro. Find them at vocalfew.com. Head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show and get awesome weekly bonuses. As you look towards the next week, I wonder, what will you do differently that rewrites an old story, revitalizes a stuck relationship, or helps you to connect more deeply with your pleasure?
So don't be ashamed. Love is supposed to be.